Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Brash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Our broadcast tonight brought to you by NatureBox, shipping great-tasting, wholesome snacks right to your door. So you can forget the vending machine and snack smarter with wholesome, delicious treats like jalapeno white cheddar popcorn. Support this show, order a free NatureBox sampler box at naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. Just browsing the news right before the show started and saw the article which just posted in the Telegraph. The title says, "Killing for Religion is Justified, Say Third of Muslim Students." Real fast while we're here from the article, it says this. The survey found that extreme Islamist ideology has a profound influence on a significant minority of Muslims on campuses across the country. They're talking about Britain, of course. The findings will concern police chiefs, the security services, and ministers who are struggling with radicalization among Muslim communities. The YouGov poll was conducted for the right-wing think tank, the Center for Social Cohesion, at 12 universities, including Imperial College and King's College London. It also found this. 40% support the introduction of Sharia into British law for Muslims. A third back the notion of a worldwide Islamic caliphate or state based on Sharia law. 40% feel it's unacceptable for Muslim men and women to mix freely. 24% do not think that men and women are equal in the eyes of Allah. And a quarter have little or no respect for homosexuals. Anyway, it's an interesting article on the Telegraph. Killing for religion is justified, say a third of Muslim students. We will get to our topic today. We're talking about religious schools, religious rules, or as Will said on Facebook today, he said religious schools, aka North Korea with a steeple. That's pretty clever, actually. As people write in with their experiences in religious institutions of education. Did you see the article in India today about the Catholic priest who was dead for 48 minutes, according to the article, came back to life and claimed God is a woman? This article released 3 days ago, a Catholic priest from Massachusetts who was officially dead for more than 48 minutes before medics were able to miraculously restart his heart, has revealed a shocking revelation about God. According to 71-year-old cleric Father John Michael O'Neill, he claims that God is a warm and comforting motherly figure whom he met in heaven. God's female. I mean, who'd have thunk it, right? Pope Francis came out just a few days ago and essentially compared trans people to nuclear weapons because of their ability to destroy God's creation. That's some more insanity around the Pope. He just seems full bore crazy lately. We started off with sort of, hey, what a sweet little man. He seems to be so much different than the other Pope. And now we look at him and go, you know, maybe you should just not speak. The Razzie Awards were announced. Of course, this last weekend was the Academy Awards, the Oscars, and I didn't even bother to watch. I'd seen a few of the films on the list, but most of them didn't interest me. But I did see the article about the Raspberry Awards, the Razzies, which is sort of the anti-Oscars. And our friend Kirk Cameron in his film Saving Christmas won 4 Razzie Awards, including Worst Picture and Worst Actor. My favorite is when they gave him the award for Worst Screen Combo. He didn't share the award with another person. They gave it to Kirk Cameron and his own ego for a worst combo. And worst picture of the year, at least from now on, you can say it's an award winner. By the way, the Razzie Trophy, it's a $4 gold spray-painted trophy. And occasionally, a star or actor or whoever will show up to receive. I think Sandra Bullock actually showed up at one Razzie ceremony after she'd had a really bad year and accepted her award. So congratulations out to Kirk. I've gotten hooked on a show on Nat Geo. I just saw that it had released to Netflix. It's called Brain Games, and I recommended it to our Facebook family because the show deals a lot with perception and the brain. And it's really interesting in the context of talking about the difference between perception and reality, what we think we saw, what we think we heard, what we think we felt. Was it actually what happened? And we really find this is the case when dealing with religious claims, personal experience claims. I was there, I saw, I heard, I felt. Does that constitute evidence? Does that mean that it actually happened? And so the show Brain Games actually spends an hour every week tricking your quote-unquote perceptions, trying different exercises, and showing how occasionally, in making certain shortcuts and whatnot, the brain will actually give you an incorrect answer, or not even necessarily an incorrect answer, but it will make an assumption, it will make a leap, it will take a shortcut, it will actually fill in gaps with things that may or may not be related to what actually is there. Very interesting stuff. If you're looking for it, it's on Netflix, at least the first season is. I guess it's been out for a few years. I just discovered it. It's called Brain Games. We'll get to your calls and emails on the show topic tonight, which is religious schools, religious rules. But first, you know, I'm leaving in 2 weeks for Australia for the Unholy Trinity tour. By the way, you can go to unholytrinitydownunder.com for that tour, which is hitting part of Australia in just a few weeks. While everybody else is stuck on the plane with airline peanuts and a package the size of a postage stamp, I'm bringing my own stash, my own snacks, and of course they are from Nature Box. Now the box, which is going to be here, I think, next week, it'll be here before the plane takes off, has a lot of my favorites in it because I stacked my online pantry specifically with them. Greek yogurt pretzels, roasted Peruvian corn kernels, Big Island pineapple, which is actually for my stepdaughter, coffee kettle popcorn, and I added in some of that pumpkin seed raisin and spice oatmeal, these small containers which heat up in a couple of minutes. They are perfect. Right? Perfect for snacks on the road. Perfect for snacks that aren't candy bars and potato chips. And you can go online and enjoy hundreds of nutritionist-approved options. Zero artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners. 0 grams trans fats. 0 high fructose corn syrup. And Nature Box ships for free right to your front door. I love these guys. You can try them out for yourself and see if you love these guys with a trial box that features 5 of their most popular snacks. So start your free trial tonight. Log on to naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. Had an email in from Robert. He was talking about the Christian school that he attended. And he actually listed out the rules. He said this: the rules were we must attend chapel every Wednesday at 10:30 to pray and get refreshed. For those who aren't aware of what chapel is, think of a church service in school. And you actually normally you dress up and have to wear a necktie, and the girls have to wear dresses for this. Missing chapel was grounds for expulsion. You had assigned seats, and they took a photo every day to make sure you were there. Men's hair could not touch the collar. You could be expelled for anything from cursing, drinking, drugs, sex, etc. Curfew was 10 p.m. weekdays and Saturday, so you could get up early and go to church on Sunday. Curfew was moved to 11 p.m. on Friday. Well, good for you. RAs made sure you were in your room on time. You had to take a Bible class each semester. First semester, I took Genesis and Exodus. Second semester, I took Matthew. You had a special study Bible. church attendance was encouraged Sunday morning, evening, and Wednesday night. I lasted a year there, but it was due to the exorbitant expense of going to this school more than the religion that I left. Robert, thanks so much for the message. Sierra said, I'm from Florida. My sisters and I were homeschooled, but there was a time when my younger sister played basketball for a Christian school's basketball team. This school was also a church, and one of the pastors was my sister's coach. Not to mention, this coach was the father of a guy I dated for less than a month. The thing that makes this so relevant is the fact that the church school was extremely strict about dating. I'm not exaggerating when I say this. They believed you should only date after you're married. I know what you're thinking, Seth. You're thinking, Sierra, that doesn't make any sense. Yes, I know. They were so strict about this rule that the pastor's 21-year-old son made me keep our new relationship a secret from everyone. Not only did he not tell his parents about me, but not even his best friend. He had to sneak around to call me on the phone, and he could only visit me if he had a good excuse for his parents. Needless to say, it didn't take long for me to feel weird about the whole thing. My sister, being part of the basketball team, said that students were having sex behind the gym all the time. Maybe that's to be expected with teenagers, but the thing that makes me so angry and disturbed about this school's ridiculous rule is that the only thing it does is promote secret keeping. Obviously, the students and churchgoers will date. They just won't tell anyone. My question is, what happens when someone gets into an abusive relationship? What happens if a student gets raped by someone they're dating? Where are the adults that will guide the students to make good decisions and keep them safe? Neither the adults or students are being held accountable, and personally, I find that terrifying. This is a perfect example of why I don't plan on keeping my mouth shut as an atheist. There are too many corrupt people in positions of religious influence. Sierra, thank you very much for the message. Let's jump to the switchboard and talk to area code 310. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio Podcast. Who's this?
Hi, this is Nick.
Nick, thanks for waiting. Thanks for calling. You're on the Thinking Atheist Podcast tonight. What do you want to talk about?
Wow, awesome. Well, I was born or raised, I should say not born, I was raised a true blue Catholic, went to basically kindergarten through university being a Catholic. And it was just interesting because I think that experience actually turned me into an atheist.
You know, I received a lot of emails from people who said something along those lines. A high percentage of it was Catholic school. My years there actually pushed me into skepticism about Catholicism and even helped to lead to my atheism. That's interesting.
Well, it's interesting because the Catholic Church loves to basically say, you know, we don't really take the Bible literally. We don't believe in everything about the Bible, but there are certain things. So when you're teaching that to a kid, you're kind of like, okay, then why am I believing everything that you're saying then?
Well, how do they teach the Bible without teaching the Bible then? Do they just cherry pick?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's all like sacramental based. So it's like, okay, we're going to take this story from Jesus and we're going to interpret it our own way. So a lot of it is basically about the sacraments of the church. And the Bible is just one of those things that, you know, we'll go back and reference it every once in a while, but you know, it's there. It's just interesting because I'd be taking classes, especially in high school, and that's when I really started to think about this stuff because it seemed like the teachers were kind of teaching what they were taught, not necessarily really thinking. And I had this one teacher who I asked her, I said, well, when Jesus comes back, right, what religion is he going to be? Is he going to be Christian? Is he going to be Jewish? Like, what is he going to choose? And she didn't have an answer. And I remember thinking, like, if this is your job, you should maybe be thinking about this almost as much as I am, I guess, right?
Did you get the impression that some of the staff was just clocking in? It was a job. They were ready to get the day done as much or more than the students. Any of that going on?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because it just felt like, you know, I didn't have the nuns. It was like the nuns were kind of my parents' generation. I'm 28 right now. The nuns were kind of that way, and it almost seemed like there was this transition where the lay people started to come in. And it seemed like the church was kind of like, all right, let's stop scaring these people off with the nuns, all right? They've caused a lot of havoc with the rulers and everything and slapping the wrist. So let's bring in the lay people to teach. But the lay people were remnants from the nuns. And so it was kind of like this, we think this is what the church believes, but we're going to kind of interpret it our own way. Almost like they didn't necessarily know what they were wanting to teach, but it was almost like, well, this is what I was raised with.
In your classes, were your fellow students, were they true believers, or did you get the vibe that they might have been placed there by a religious parent because, hey, Catholic school is a better education?
Yeah, I mean, I went to school with a lot of non-Catholics. A lot of the reasoning why people went to Catholic school was because the public school system, and this is in Las Vegas, the public school system wasn't the best. And so that was always the excuse for my parents was, you know, we're going to send you there, you know, so that you can get a better education. But yeah, a lot of the kids there, I think we were just kids. We were just kind of like, okay, well, you know, you teach us that. All right, now I'm going to go home and like, you know, play Xbox and kind of do my own thing. I'm going to take off the tie and the slacks and kind of do my own thing.
Interesting stuff. Do you regret being a part of a religious school growing up?
I wouldn't say I regret it because I think it really honed my skills to be able to actually reason because, you know, I would be hearing these, you know, the education was great. And so that was teaching you to think, but then you'd go to the religion class and be like, well, wait a second, this isn't really making a whole lot of sense. And then you just hear arbitrary rules that, you know, like you're not allowed to have a, you know, stubble. You're not allowed to have long hair. You're not allowed to have open toed shoes. You're not allowed to have an untucked shirt. And I'm sitting here thinking, okay, who do you follow that has long hair, open toed shoes, sandals, you know, a beard, and who has a robe? That's a completely untucked shirt. Like, Jesus, hello. Like, I'm trying to look like your savior. Give me a little bit of a break here, you know?
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But that was my experience with it. And I really do think because of the internet, education is just going to be, people just learning more. That's religion's worst enemy. And you see the Catholic Church right now trying to, you know, almost do doublespeak where they're like, no, we believe in science. And hey, guess what? Gays are great now. We're okay with gays now. But then you'll see, you know, you hear the Pope say something to like a conservative group where they're just like, God, I hate those gays. You know, I can't believe that they're, oh, but anyways, they're nuclear weapons now. You know, it's just, it's like this doublespeak because they're losing members. They're losing members. And now they're scrambling to, I guess, coexist in a world with knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's the history of religion, isn't it? Well, most religions trying to sort of morph into whatever keeps them culturally relevant. The only reason that was it Pope John Paul II actually said, hey, we embrace and accept evolution and we don't think it contradicts the scripture is because the evidence was finally so overwhelming that they just had no choice. Yeah, no choice.
Oh, absolutely. And that and survival, just like with any organism. Survival is key. Survival is what you're going to do. So they're going to have to change just like they've done for centuries. And, you know, I think eventually it is going to get to this kind of this place where religion is kind of this afterthought. I really do. I think eventually it's going to get to that place because the education is just going to be too overwhelming. The facts are just going to be too overwhelming. And so until that day happens, we need to keep fighting.
Well, I appreciate the call very much. Thanks for being a part of the broadcast tonight.
Thanks for everything you do, Seth. You're awesome. And I'm going to be emailing you soon. I've got some awesome posters I made up for you and your Australia Down Under tour. So I'm going to be sending those your way.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Take care.
No worries. Take care. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye-bye. Manfred sent a message and said, I attended a religious private school near Chicago for 3 years. It was a severe, joyless place. Here are some of the more interesting rules I can remember. Dress code. Kindergarten girls could wear pants. First grade on up were expected to wear skirts that reached at least to mid-calf. Kindergarten boys could wear jeans. First grade on up, they had to wear slacks. No khakis, those are the devil's pants. And button-down shirts. And for those who think Manfred's full of crap, I went to a school that was the same way. many people wanted to wear khakis instead of slacks, but khakis were not allowed, at least in that context. Back to his letter. Athletic shoes were for recess, PE, and after-school sports only. Additional rule for girls in PE and athletics, knee-length culottes. By the way, I had to look culottes up. Didn't know what it was. C-U-L-O-T-T-E-S. Women's trousers, usually knee-length or calf-length, cut full to resemble a skirt. Boys and girls were not permitted to interact during recess. K through 8th grade, boys and girls sat on opposite sides of the classroom and were not even allowed to speak to each other. 9th through 12th grade, boys and girls had separate classes. That's good. Always keep the genders apart. We know how well that works. The only time the two groups were permitted social contact was during lunch. The school was sponsored by a church. The principal was also the minister. The student's entire family was expected to attend Sunday and Wednesday services. Failure to attend these services could result in expulsion. The worst part of all, I never thought to question these rules at the time. They had me fully indoctrinated. Hell, they had me put in a group of boys being prepared for the ministry, and I thought it was a great idea at the time. I had dreams of being a televangelist. Egad, Manfred, thank you very much for the message. Area code 763, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio Podcast. Who's this?
This is what it must feel like to talk to Jesus.
Just stop.
Seth, you're amazing. You're a big hero of mine, so thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I appreciate it. What's up?
My name is Scott. Nice to meet you officially. I went to Catholic school during grade school, and I'll never forget there was a kid in my class who was chewing his nails, and we had two nun teachers. One of the nuns chucked the eraser and hit him right in the forehead and says, "Chew it."
No way.
No.
This sounds like this sounds like some sort of caricature of a story about Catholic school.
That happened at Immaculate Conception, which is a fitting name, of course.
And said, chew the eraser?
Right. She didn't necessarily make him chew it, but she was so fed up with this kid chewing his nails, and she just chucked it at him, and it beamed him right in the forehead. It was mildly hilarious, but
probably not to him. He was probably a little horrified by...
Well, I think we're all horrified. We're in fourth grade. Like, what's she going to do with us? But I remember another thing, too, that every once in a while, like maybe three times a year, we would have jeans day, and the class went berserk. Like, what jeans, what stonewash are you going to wear? It was kind of funny.
In my Baptist school, the girls were not allowed to wear jeans at all, unless it was on a football day. We had a big game Friday night. Then it's like they call it Spirit Day or something, where everybody can wear jeans, like it was a big deal. But the idea of not allowing girls to wear jeans was that they thought the jeans were too form-fitting, as if there are no other kinds of clothes, non-denim clothes, that can be, you know, tailored to fit the human body. I mean, you know, people are very creative. If they want to wear something that accentuates their form in any way, they'll do it. And they don't need blue jeans to do it. You know what I'm saying? And in many ways, absolutely, by making it forbidden, by making it a rule that you cannot, people got really creative about finding ways to say, yes, we can and we will. It was interesting.
Right. And if you don't mind, Seth, with your permission, I'm not making any money, but I'd like to do a plug for a new podcast that just aired on Sunday, if I may.
Yeah, what is it?
It's called Positively Godless. It's on YouTube and also on Facebook, facebook.com/positivelygodless. It's a video podcast that three of us are doing. So
So you call and kiss my ass and then slug your show on the live radio.
No, that's not what I'm trying to do. I was on that show on Sunday plugging it too, so I'm just whoring myself out as much as I can.
Not at all. It's all right. Best wishes with the show, okay?
Thank you so much, Seth. I appreciate it.
Take it easy.
All right. Bye-bye.
I had Leslie send in a message. She said, I attended an Assembly of God Bible College in the mid-80s. We were required to take a class that taught strict gender roles and gender expression. As a woman, I had to take social dynamics for women. I think I barely passed. Today, I'm an out lesbian atheist. Should have figured it out during class. It could have saved me some money by dropping out. Leslie, thanks for the message. Joe said in my Baptist school, they'd send out permission slips at the beginning of the year for all the parents to sign so that the teacher could spank the school children. As a young geeky kid, I was often a target of bullies and found myself getting beat up quite a bit. As afraid as I was of the bullies, I was equally afraid of the teachers. Some anger about being put in that position still stays with me to this day. Michael said, I heard you were doing a podcast on religious schools, and as a product of 13 years of religious education, I just had to write in. What I find to be the most interesting aspect of my time in religious school has to be my experience in high school. Before entering high school, my religious belief was already on shaky ground. But if there's anything that helped seal the deal sending me on my path to outspoken atheist, it was my high school religion teachers. Year after year, they taught us the truth, the actual truth. They utterly trashed the Bible, giving us the dirt on how our holidays were pretty much bootleg versions of ancient pagan holidays that were strategically hand-picked to ease religious conversion. They told us that we have no idea when exactly Jesus lived and died, nor do we really know who wrote the Bible. They told us that much of the New Testament was likely written several hundred years after Jesus probably lived and instilled in us an idea of how unreliable the texts truly are. I lived for a long time in the southern United States and made some very good friends there, many of whom were lifelong fundamentalist Southern Baptist go-to-meet-and-greet Christians, and some of whom attended Christian school. Their experience was in stark contrast to mine. And I find myself strangely grateful for the honesty of my high school religious teachers who were willing to throw Jesus under the bus to foster critical thinking skills and a healthy perspective. Mike, thank you very much for kind of an unexpected message. Area code 801, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Hi, Seth. This is Ethan.
Thanks so much for calling. What's going on tonight?
I just thought I'd give you a call because I go to BYU here in Provo. I recently stopped going there, probably about a year ago. I'm in the middle of transferring to next school, but I thought I want to talk about the weird stuff that Mormons do here in Happyville.
You sound like you're in the middle of something. Are you walking? Are you
no? Sorry, I was longboarding.
What's going on over there?
I was longboarding home. I didn't actually think you'd talk to me.
That's what I do. I'm a show host and you're a caller. Let's do this thing. Now, for those who aren't aware of what BYU is, Brigham Young is owned by the Mormon Church and is a hugely religious institution of quote-unquote learning. So give me your perspective. What do you think?
My perspective is that BYU is typically all right, but there's a lot of really weird little things in the culture here at BYU. Like, they don't sell any caffeinated beverages at all on campus, like Coca-Cola, Dr. Pepper, you name it. Another thing is you can't have a beard. For some reason, you can have a mustache, but if you go to try to take a test and you have any facial hair at all, they'll turn you away, and you basically either have to shave or you have to take an F on the test.
Wait, you're a college student, and you show up to take an exam, and they see a mustache, beard, or stubble, and you are forbidden?
Yeah, well, you can have a mustache, but you can't have a beard.
Well, what's the thinking on this?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's sort of designed by a committee somewhere at the top, but I'm not sure. It's not part of the religion at all. I guess it's part of the honor code. Same thing with the honor code. You can't drink while you go to school there. You can't have sex of any kind while you go to BYU.
Yeah, good luck with that in college.
Yeah.
Good luck enforcing that one among people who matured sexually years and years and years before they enrolled. Yeah.
It's well ingrained in the culture. And if you aren't living the right way, if you aren't living according to the honor code, the school honor code, somebody's going to notice and you're going to get called in and have to talk to your bishop on Sunday. Or you're going to get called into the honor code office and get expelled or suspended or something.
Were there any positives to it for you? I mean, did you have classes you liked, teachers you liked, things that brought benefit to you?
Yeah, absolutely. There, it's really a great educational institution. Like, the education I received there really was beneficial. And I feel like a lot of the classes were very, very good. There's just a lot of little things, like in my biology 101 class, they're talking about evolution and they make you read The Faith of a Scientist as part of the class to sort of give you a perspective other than just, oh, evolution is true no matter what. They just, everything just has a little Mormon glaze over the top of it.
The old Mormon glaze. Yeah, I totally get it. Well, thanks for sharing your perspective, my friend. I appreciate being a part of the broadcast tonight.
Yeah, thank you, Seth.
All right, take it easy. Yeah, I'm amazed at how many sort of pies the Mormon Church has its fingers in, you know, not just BYU, but in businesses and entities and organizations all across the country and around the world. And of course, many of these are revenue producing, and as a church, they are not required to disclose how much they make or what they do with the money. Very convenient. Catherine sent a message and said, I've only just told my mom about the anti-abortion video I was forced to watch at my Catholic high school. All it was a montage of infant corpses claimed to be aborted at 12 to 16 weeks of pregnancy. Due to proper knowledge on fetal development, I already knew the video was a load of BS. Needless to say, she was livid that her then 14-year-old was shown it. Also, I was told Planned Parenthood was the devil's headquarters. Catherine, thanks for the message. I was in sixth grade at my Christian school, and they brought a quote-unquote specialist in. I don't know what his title was, but it was during a part of the satanic panic of the 1980s, where everything was of the devil. And they brought a guy in who was a supposed expert on secular rock music. Now, we didn't know who he was. We didn't know his face. We didn't know his name. We didn't really know anything except that he was presented as the expert. So they brought us all in to the classroom. We're in homeroom, sixth grade. And he brought a record player with him. And he brought out all of these satanic rock albums. I can't recall exactly which ones, but at the time it had to have been Ozzy Osbourne, AC/DC, you know, Iron Maiden, Alice Cooper, that kind of thing. And he played the albums backwards at these strategic points, or he played tapes of the albums being played backward at specific points. He had a plan for us, right? It just scared the shit out of us. We're hearing anything played backwards on a rock album in the right context can be a little unnerving. Any album, you can play the Mormon Tabernacle Choir backward, and it can really kind of freak you out. Can you hear the word Satan? And we rushed home convinced that Satan was hiding out in our albums. Many churches had album burnings, you know, but we were in school, right? We're supposed to be learning English. We're supposed to be learning about history. We're supposed to be learning life skills, being tooled up to one day become educated, productive adults. And instead, time was taken out of our school day at an impressionable age to be scared of some invisible satanic force out there that was hiding in the grooves of our albums. And this was considered helpful. This is the same school that brought in the Thief in the Night series of films and actually took time out of class to bring all the students in to show them a film which depicted the horrors of the tribulation, essentially the Book of Revelation. We had strange rules. You know, the girls couldn't wear jeans unless on Friday. They measured the skirt lengths with military precision. I don't know how many inches above the knee, buddy of mine went to Green Country Christian, and their skirts on the ladies there had to be floor length. In fact, their cheerleaders had to wear long dresses at the basketball games. We'd go watch the basketball games as we went to go play against them. But oh, you look over there, and their color was green, and they had on these long floor-length green skirts. It's like they were going to prom. Weird. Strange. I mentioned in a previous broadcast about how we'd be out in the parking lot shooting baskets, wearing our slacks and dress shoes and neckties, because that was kind of our normal. I had an email from someone who asked that I not give their name. The email says this: technically not a religious institution, my high school did have a few Muslim teachers. And despite it being against the law here in the UK, their religious beliefs started to creep into some of their classes. One in particular was my teacher, let's call him Mr. X, who taught what we called life skills classes. These classes were supposed to teach us skills that we could use in the real world when we left school. Mr. X went as far as reading bits of the Quran as examples on how to live a good life, and once he remarked that all children are born Muslim. As if that wasn't bad enough, the final straw came for me when he taught us the differences between men and women. Women, he said, were created to give birth and help men. He then went into science to back up his claim. Afterwards, he took us to the sports hall to demonstrate this. He instructed the girls to lie down on the floor side by side, and then told us boys to walk across them, thereby symbolizing how a woman's purpose in life was to support a man. I'm ashamed to say, as a dumb kid going along with what he was told, I did this. I took my shoes off and walked across them as, according to the teacher, the Creator intended us to do. One of the girls got hurt and went to the school nurse crying, but the rest of the lesson continued in the sports hall as Mr. X stood in front of us and further explained what we had just done. It was the last lesson of the day, so I walked home with many troubling thoughts in my mind. That night I told my dad what had happened, and he was furious. I mean, he really flipped out. The next morning he went to school with me to see the headmaster. A month later, Mr. X had left for another school, and of course there were all sorts of rumors surrounding it. I like to think that the system worked, and that Mr. X had been fired. I left some time ago, but my little sister goes there now, and I was alarmed to learn recently that Mr. X is back. She doesn't have him for any classes, and as far as she's aware, no one's had any problems with him. The fact that he is still allowed to mold young minds worries me. Thank you very much for the message. Area code 414, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. Who's this?
Oh, Seth, I cannot believe I'm talking to you right now. This is Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
From Milwaukee. I don't, right now, after that email, I have no clue why I'm calling in, because I'm just fuming about
it just men makes you crazy, doesn't it?
Walk over women. It's, yeah. Absolutely.
They sell it in Christian schools and in Christian cultures and in many religious cultures as helpmate. The woman is designed as the helper, the helpmate. You know, the man is the head of the house as God has positioned him. And yet we are, as men, supposed to love our wives as Christ loved the church, but the woman is essentially there to lift up and support the man.
I have quite a bit of experience with that, being a fundamentalist Baptist while I grew up, and I had the foresight to think that even though I wanted to go into writing or something that a Bible college wouldn't offer, I needed to go to Bible college because that's where God wanted me. And then there at Bible college, I was definitely in the subordinate role, especially I'm a blind woman. You were talking about rules about skirts a while ago. And our rules were, well, our shirts had to be our shirt collars couldn't be more than 5 fingers in the back from the collarbone or 3 fingers in the front, you know. The skirts had to cover your knees, and there was no, I mean, there was no, it was military precision, like you were talking about. There was, if there was any suspicion, you were going to be called out, you know.
It just seems so odd. Now, I've heard about this in high schools, but in a university setting, it just seems like you've stepped in a time machine and gone back to, you know, the dark ages, so to speak.
Well, and they call themselves universities, but, you know, it's just because they can have accreditation from other Christian whatevers.
The accreditation, the quote-unquote accreditation that many of these religious institutions get are simply from other religious institutions, right? They have oversight.
I believe so, and I'm not sure.
No. It's absolutely true. They are accredited by other religious bodies, which accredit Christian schools, and there are qualifications in place. But essentially, they are churches being accredited by churches, right? They're being qualified by other religious institutions. It's not like there's an objective oversight committee. There's not an objective body that's sort of regulating them to make sure that they are teaching proper science, proper history. They just have other religious institutions who are making sure they are teaching the right religion the right way, that kind of
thing. Right. And when you're a student sitting in the seats and you just hear the professors come up and I would pit our education up against any university, and you know, you just, you don't know any better. You're learning science there. Okay, you're learning creation. But yeah, you're learning math, you think you're getting the good stuff, the real stuff, the stuff from God, when it's just some other church that says you're doing okay. So,
well, Sarah, thanks for sharing your perspective and thanks for being a part of the broadcast. It means a lot.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
All right. Take care. Alana sent me a message and said, my grandfather and all 5 of his children attended Catholic elementary schools, but only my grandpa, one of my uncles, and my dad were forced to sit on their left hands and forced to write with their right hands, or be hit over the head and knuckles by the nuns if they attempted to write with their left hands instead of their right hands. Alana, seems like somebody on the radio mentioned this last year or the year before, where some nuns or teachers in Catholic school believe that it was satanic in some way or sinful to be left-handed, and they would try to force left-handed students to be right-handed. Back to her message. 2 of my cousins were also left-handed at birth and attended Catholic schools, and even though the teachers are no longer allowed to beat the devil out of left-handed kids, my cousins were forced to switch to their right hands. Luckily, my brother and I attended public schools our entire lives and are both happily ambidextrous. Alana, thanks for the message. Eli said, I'm 13 and attend a Jewish day school in Denver, Colorado. There are 3 crazy things about my school. 1, you have to wear a kippah or yarmulke the entire day and pay 50 cents if you don't have one. 2, the 10th grade goes to Israel every year for 5 to 6 weeks and learns a boatload of the worst language ever, Hebrew. And last but definitely not least, we have 4 Judaic classes every day. I am the only atheist there. And yes, you can be a Jewish atheist. I have no idea how, but that's what they tell me. So I get into hot debates with a friend of mine. I hope this is of help in understanding just how crazy Jews are. Well, Eli, I don't know that I'd call all Jewish people crazy. Many are cultural Jews, right? They don't believe in a literal Bible. They don't believe in a literal Torah, but they enjoy the traditions and practices of Judaism. And so they are sort of cultural Jews in that way. So I'm not going to make that blanket statement along with you, but nice to see a free-thinking 13-year-old out there. Thanks for writing the show. A person who asked to be identified only as K, the letter K, said this, I grew up a Christian Scientist and went to a Christian Scientist school from middle school through high school. Christian Scientists believe that God is omniscient, omnipotent, and omnipresent. meaning that God is all good, all powerful, and everywhere. Given this, nothing can ever be imperfect. This principle is applied to everything from conflict in marriages to cancer. Christian scientists do not believe in matter because matter causes pain, which is not real. There is no life, truth, nor intelligence in matter, is how the scientific statement of being starts out, which is one of the basic laws of Christian science. If ever anything seems to be not right, Christian scientists are told to look at it as an error. They're told to stand porter at the door of thought, admitting only such conclusions as you wish realized bodily results. This essentially means we're told to only think good thoughts and ignore the problem. Christian scientists do not go to doctors when they're feeling ill. Instead, they call up a Christian science practitioner to help them pray about it. I've lost a parent as well as several friends and acquaintances because of this belief. When going to a Christian scientist school, if ever you fell ill, you were first told to basically suck it up and, quote, know the truth. If you were unwilling to pretend that you were feeling fine, however, there was a place called Campus House for students to go and rest while reading Christian science literature. No doctors are ever seen, no ambulances called in the case of emergency, and no medicine is given or allowed. Technically, Christian scientists claim that you're allowed to take medicine while remaining a Christian scientist, but practitioners are not allowed to pray for you while you are taking any kind of medication. This hinders many Christian scientists who might otherwise want to take medication from taking it, because many of them like the comfort of a Christian science practitioner. At this school, no one was allowed to take medication while being enrolled as a student there. They even tried to extend this to face washes advertised to treat acne. I remember the girls in the dorms were very upset about this. I also remember a friend of mine was not allowed to go to school for a while because he decided to take medication for a problem. One time I walked into the bathroom and my friend was having a seizure on the floor. The teachers were right there praying for her. I remember leaving the bathroom and going to the quiet room to read the Science and Health, which is the holy book along with the Bible. I remember feeling a sense of peace. Everything was going to be okay because I was praying for her. I felt good and proud to be praying for my friend. Now I look back at the incident and shake my head in disgust at my actions. There's an adjoining college to this school. After the students graduate high school, the majority of them go directly to the adjoining college to continue their education. I, however, decided not to go to the college because I'd stopped drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak. I remember finding out from Facebook that a classmate of mine from high school had passed away. He, too, had a continued problem with seizures throughout his life. One day, during the middle of the night, he had a seizure and never woke up. His roommate, upon seeing what was going on, prayed for him instead of getting help. This deeply saddens me because I have no doubt in my mind that if he had gone to a doctor, been diagnosed, and been given the proper medication, he would still be alive today. Again, thank you for your work, Seth. It reminds me that I'm not alone and that I'm not crazy. You should do a podcast on religious camps. I have some personal near-death experiences pertaining to Christian science camps that I would like to share. Kay, thank you very much for the message. That's an idea for a future show to talk. Is it like a summer camp? Or is it a different type of camp? Like 1 week, 2 week, a month, that kind of thing? I'd be curious to find out more.
This is Andy.
Andy, thanks for calling the broadcast. We're talking about religious schools, religious rules. What do you think?
Well, I'm an educator. I've been a teacher for 6 years now. I taught in an Orthodox Jewish school for three of those. And so raised in Wisconsin and brought up Roman Catholic, left that when I was young. And then really seeing how the Orthodox Jewish, the school, how they kind of set these kids up not to succeed, but to just be rabbis and split the genders at 8 years old, and just the rules they kind of shoved to the side of society and make their own.
You are a current educator in that school?
Not currently, no. I'm currently an educator in a public school in Texas.
What was your impression of the, of the private religious education you were giving? Was it education or was it indoctrination or both?
Well, half of the day would be their religious studies, and I'd get them in the second half of the day and try to fit everything in a normal full-length day in that half of a day. So they were, condensed and cheated out of some of that secular study.
Was it a positive experience for the kids? Would they have been better off in another environment, or were they genuinely benefited?
I think for the circumstances that they were raised in, that it was the best they could have gotten. To put them in a public school, I think it would have been completely shell-shocking, and they would have been possibly ostracized because of that, because of how different they were.
All right. Anything else?
No, I just love the show, and I'll keep listening. Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
David sent a message and said, "Yes, I'm the guy who attended Jerry Falwell's Liberty University. You poor, poor man. Of course, when I started, it was named Liberty Baptist College. Although a devoted Christian prior to attending, I was completely burned out with church before I even became a sophomore. Attending church 3 times per week was nothing new to me. But adding in Bible classes 2 to 3 times per week, plus homework, mandatory chapel 3 times per week, Christian service that was graded, weekly dorm devotions. I was also on an athletic scholarship, so our team had mandatory Friday night devotions. It really pissed me off to miss Miami Vice. Finally, I'd had enough. So, to save my faith, I moved off campus as a junior. My church attendance evaporated my last couple years at Liberty, and I didn't miss it. The fascinating tales of my roommate, who had previously attended Bob Jones University, did numb some of the pain. I'm sure that guy is selling cars somewhere, not that there's anything wrong with that. As I reflect, the rules at Liberty were all focused on outward appearances. As one of Jerry's kids, Jerry Falwell's kids, we didn't want to be seen around town as anything less than a well-behaved, clean-cut champion of Christ. As Sumner Wemp, our evangelist professor, would teach, someone would likely go to hell should we disappoint some non-believer's expectation of a Christian. This was a heavy burden to carry as an 18-year-old. After I'd given up on Christianity, after a few years as a foreign missionary, I'd become reacquainted with a number of my former classmates. Guess what? They're atheists. They're smarter than me because they woke up a lot quicker. I'm thinking of starting a social media site for atheist alumni of Liberty University. What do you think, Seth? Hell yes, I think it's a great idea. Absolutely. Anyway, he says, "I really love the show. I'd been listening to a Christian show on Blog Talk Radio for about a year. The Thinking Atheist was always ranked at or near the top of the ratings. As I'd been questioning my faith for the last couple years, I finally took courage and clicked on your show, and the rest is history. I couldn't be happier. Thank you very much." David, thank you so much for the message. Yeah, I think right now out of 15,000 active shows on Blog Talk Radio, we are at number 2, and it's a privilege to be there, and it's because of you and your support and listenership. So thank you for being a part of that. It means a lot to me. My last email for the broadcast tonight is from Emily. Emily said this, "I grew up in an extremely conservative, fundamentalist Baptist family and never attended a public school. Last year, I met with the independent investigative team GRACE, G-R-A-C-E, who was hired to look into sex abuse allegations at Bob Jones in Greenville, South Carolina, where I attended high school and college. Many of the 80-plus stories in the report mimic my own experiences, being abused by another person associated with the school while at the same time being taught to stay silent for the sake of Christ, to repent of, quote, my involvement at age 14, and to simply forgive. To be honest, I didn't realize, until someone told me 6 years ago at age 28, that a crime had been committed against me when I was 14. I'd always believed I was complicit. I didn't know the word consent. This act and the shame that my former culture placed on impurity, especially in females, led me to the point by age 18 where I was suicidal. I knew no other life than fundamentalism, and I was so heavily cautioned about the dangers of the world that life outside their walls didn't even seem possible. And I didn't want to continue the life inside those walls that was so crushing, hopeless, and full of manipulation. When my roommate walked in on me my freshman year of college, a cocktail of pills in my hand, sitting on my bed in the dorms about to end my life, she took me to the dorm counselor. This counselor was only 4 years older than myself, had spent her whole life homeschooled, had no clue how to help an emotionally broken, desperate girl. But to be honest, the administration of Bob Jones University didn't know how either. They told me not to tell anyone about my suicide attempt, and they told professors and others that I was taking a bit of personal leave. Their reasoning was, because if people found out there was a suicide attempt on campus, then their enrollment numbers would suffer. They were concerned that people would see me and think the school wasn't a safe place. It wasn't then, it isn't now. It only took me another 15 years to be able to say that publicly. So they sent me home, to a home that was full of shame and hiding and secrets. My parents' response was that I was an embarrassment to them, and now people would think they were bad parents as a result of my choices. Even at such a dark point in my life, image was everything to them. Our culture dictated it. After all, we were God's show window to the world. The counseling at Bob Jones was single-focused. I needed to repent of my selfishness and just let God lead my life. I learned quickly to just tell them the right answers, quote-unquote right answers, and fell back into the cycle of depression and suicidal thoughts. I spent the next 10 years of my life believing my suicidal thoughts and constant depression were because of my own pride and selfishness. About 4 years ago, through a series of health issues and pregnancy losses, I began to question everything. I questioned, not assuming I knew the correct answers. Over the next 6 months or so, I felt my faith crumbling. I'd never felt so alone. I was desperate to hear something from the God I had served for 30 years, the God that was supposed to make sense out of sex abuse and suicide attempts and the loss of the babies I never got to meet. But what I was met with was utter silence for months and then years. I was never so desperate to hear the voice of God, to receive some direction or help. But when I found help, it was through the hands of humans, not the supernatural. Comfort was there, through the shared tears of friends and the tangible love of my husband, not through prayers. And now I'm learning that freedom from abuse is there too, through the help of trained and licensed counselors, not through memorizing Bible verses to repeat to myself during flashbacks. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for encouraging me to question everything. As you've said before, you learn a lot about people when you declare you're not going to live life by their rules. I learned it through tears as I watched my entire world crumble. But what I've also learned is that my life is worth fighting for. For the first time in 34 years, I'm finding freedom, hope, and even joy. Not hope in knowing that one day all my tears will be wiped away, but rather in knowing that truth is worth fighting for. Hope in seeing that despite my upbringing, that I'm no longer bound by rules and fear. I'm learning that my voice matters. I realize that even though at times this path has felt lonely, that I am not alone. Thank you for sharing my story. Thank you for being a part of my story. I am grateful. Emily. Emily, I'm just reaching through the radio and giving you a great big bear hug right now. Thank you for sharing what had to have been a difficult story to write down, and I'm glad that you found comfort, flesh and blood comfort, real world answers in a real world, right? While everybody else is tossing out the platitudes, the empty scriptures, the pie in the sky, ultimately the comfort comes, the recovery comes, the answers come here in the real world with real people like you and like me. And I'm so glad you finally sort of found your way out into some joy, and I hope you have even better days ahead. All my best to you and yours. Thanks so much to everyone for sharing your stories tonight on the Religious Schools, Religious Rules broadcast. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Unitarians. What is a Unitarian? What do they think? What do they preach? Or do they preach? We're going to have a show on that. That's coming up next week. If you have some input you'd like to provide for that broadcast, the email address is podcast@thethinkingatheist.com. Now that the broadcast is over, don't forget to go to our sponsor page, naturebox.com/thinkingatheist, where you can sign up to get your free sampler box of great tasting and wholesome snacks like French, vanilla, almond, granola, and so much more. Log on to naturebox.com/thinkingatheist, and I will see you next week.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.